All right, show the Arms Room Show with Glenn.
Andrew.
And Dave.
And thank you to all of our patrons for continuing to support the show, supporting our community service classes. We truly appreciate what you enable us to do. Alumni events, don't forget about them coming up. This is for any Independence Training alumni, meaning you've completed any program with us at all. And that is next two events, September 13th, Armed Structural Movement, both handgun and carbine at TAC Hub. This is a paid class, but if you are a patron of the Arms Room as well as an Independence Training alumni, then you can use the coupon code when you're checking out with the class. Patron20, P-A-T-R-O-N, all caps, Patron20, and that'll give you some savings. September 20th is the other alumni-only event. It's 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., and that's going to be our digital privacy class taught by Privacy Mike right here at our schoolhouse in Tempe. If you need the address, please hit us up either on the alumni Facebook page or email us directly, info@trainingaz.com, and we'll give you the address. I highly, highly recommend this program. Moving into some fun news, police use a baby's DNA to investigate its father for a crime. So check this out. In New Jersey, police needed some DNA to investigate a man for a sexual assault way back from the 90s. They couldn't get the guy's DNA. They didn't have probable cause to make that happen. So because every newborn baby has its blood drawn for medical screening purposes, they sneakily got the baby's DNA.
Oh, you mean like Ancestry.com does?
Yeah. Got the baby's DNA, linked it genealogically to the father, and then used that as probable cause to get a warrant, to get a cheek swab from the suspect, which actually did confirm that he was guilty of a sexual assault from 30 years ago.
Wow. That's awesome.
It's an interesting concept. However, think of all the horrible ways that can be used. So remember, don't forget the Digital Security and Privacy Alumni event on September 20th, 6 to 10 p.m. here at the schoolhouse. Totally free for alumni. It's an amazing class. Trust me, you're going to learn a ton of really, really useful information. But, you know, it's just another one of those things you got to be thinking about. I thought we were done talking about this, but I guess we're still talking about it. Alec Baldwin.
Oh, is that still a thing?
Yeah, he gave another big interview. He is now saying the shooting has taken years off his life, which is fucking hilarious because it turns out the shooting took years off that lady's life too.
Yeah.
What a fucking piece of shit. It's just like the Hollywood elites, this is the elites generally in this country, but especially celebrities, who I'll never understand why people care about what people who pretend to be other people for a living. I've never understood why people care what the fuck they do, think, or feel. I don't give a shit. Live, die, I don't even care. When I hear a celebrity's dead, I'm like, oh, that's a bummer, and I move on with my life. They're not even fucking real people. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, ugh, I don't care. I don't care. They literally pretend to be other people. Their whole life is pretending. Their whole life is pretend. And you don't think they can pretend in an interview? Come on. I love taking years off his life. Well, guess who else just took years off their life of, you fucking dickhead?
Why isn't he in jail yet?
He's absolved himself of any responsibility, saying there's two people who didn't do what they were supposed to do. He said the armor for making sure the gun didn't have any live rounds and the assistant director who handed him the gun without double checking it. See, it's always someone else's fault. That's how these elites work. It's always somebody else's fault. And because this guy has the money, which we've talked about this on the show before, because he has the money and the power and the influence, he's able to get away with this shit. This was a regular person on the street. If we were in a class and I thought a gun had blanks and it actually had live ammo, and it went, and Dave had loaded it and handed it to Drew, and then Drew gave it to me, and then I shot somebody with it, it wouldn't matter what these two did. I would be in prison right now. I would be in prison for second-degree murder because I pointed a loaded gun at somebody and pulled the fucking trigger.
And nobody would know about it.
And then no one would give a shit because I'm not a Hollywood elite. But because this motherfucker has money and all this other shit, he's able to say, well, it wasn't my fault, it wasn't my fault, it wasn't my fault.
Well, it's the same with Brittany Griner. She breaks the law in Russia, so she's in jail.
Yeah.
Got convicted, right? But we're going to try to jump through all these hoops because she can put a basketball in a hoop.
Yeah. Who even watches the WNBA? Can I just be a dick for a second? Who fucking even cares?
Weren't they even thinking about trading someone?
A terrorist. Like, yeah. A Russian terrorist.
Yes.
To release her?
Yes. Yeah. Like bad people. And I'm like, you know what? Let her go there, break the rule. Now she has to live by that.
And what'd she get, 8 or 10 years?
Like 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
But if they do happen to find a way to get her home, are they then going to release all the people they put in prison who in the United States for marijuana possession?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course not.
They should.
No, because those people aren't famous.
Yeah.
All the people Kamala Harris put in jail in Chicago, right, for marijuana possession. Mm-hmm. Are they going to go free now because we no longer, you know, we're going to make special arrangements for this celebrity, but not for...
Not for regular people. Not for the peasants. Right. Rules for thee, but not for me.
Yep.
Further, the armorer is also, of course, claiming no responsibility. She actually filed a lawsuit against the movie's gun and ammo supplier, accusing them of mixing live rounds into the blanks, which is possible. You know, it's possible they made a mistake. Ultimately, this is the fault of a breakdown of a system. And who's – look, there were people who left the set because they were already saying how unsafe the gun handling was.
Yeah.
So already there was a breakdown in the system, is obvious.
Wasn't this not the first incident that happened on that set?
Correct.
Not saying that someone died.
No one else had been killed previously.
But they had already checked guns and when their ammo wasn't supposed to be in
there. Yep, they already had all kinds of other problems. There had been unsafe handling. There had been negligent discharges. There had been a lot of shit like that, which is kind of like why you don't allow that shit in your life, because sooner or later it's going to lead to something like this. The point is nobody wants to take fucking responsibility for it. And ultimately there's only one person who's responsible, who's ultimately responsible. And there's a person who put the gun in their hand and pointed at another human being and pressed the trigger. It is that person's responsibility and only that person's responsibility. Other people should be held responsible to an extent. That is true for their part in the error.
Yeah.
Right? But ultimately, the person who should be put on display and held to the highest standard. We took a kid, a 17-year-old kid, who tried to use a gun to defend himself, who successfully used a gun to defend himself in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Of course, I'm talking about Kyle Rittenhouse. And we put that kid, we dissected his life, and we ripped his life apart because he lawfully used a gun in self-defense, and this motherfucker gets to fucking accidentally shoot someone with a gun using it unsafely. Kyle Rittenhouse scored, what, 3 out of 5 hits? He used the gun as effectively as fucking possible.
Why are there any live rounds on the set anyway?
I don't know. I think they do maybe some shit with live rounds. I don't know. I don't even know. I don't know the answer to that. The whole thing's fucking retarded.
But yeah, if you're gonna use a gun in any form or fashion, it's your responsibility to check it to know how to make it safe.
One of the things we teach in our medical programs is always like pre-planning for emergencies, knowing where your local trauma centers are, knowing where your level one trauma center is, making sure that, you know, you understand the right hospital to go to. Not all hospitals are created equal, and you sure as fuck don't want to drive to a freaking urgent care if you're dying, all right? Because there's nothing urgent about urgent care, and they're like a level 5 trauma center for a joke, right? Like they're not a trauma center. So you want to know. You also want to know primary and alternate routes to get there, and you want to be able to be effective. And here's why I bring this up. In Arizona, right on the 202, just recently, a 32-year-old man was shot through his passenger side window in the shoulder. He then drove himself to the hospital. Now, this brings up the question, are you prepared to drive yourself to the nearest trauma center? Do you know on the way to work? That's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. On the way to work, at home, around town, do you know where major trauma centers are? Without having to Google map that shit. If you have to, oh my God, I've been hurt and I'm dying. Even more so, can you render aid to yourself? Do you have that skill set? Even more, do you keep a medical kit in your vehicle within reach of the driver? If you are the driver, can you access your primary med kit? Or did you stick it in the trunk, put it under the back seat, put it in your go bag, you know, in the back somewhere, yada, yada. If I got shot, that's just a question you have to ask yourself. Could I, A, render aid, B, effectively get myself to a higher level of care?
Yeah, because I watched The Shooter. And I could take my knife and cut a hole in my seat
and
reach back and find the med kit.
Grab the med kit out of the government vehicle trunk. All these things are important questions to ask yourself. That's a pretty amazing survival story.
So he did make it?
He did. He survived. It was in the shoulder, probably a non-life-threatening wound, I would guess. But also, another thing happened in wonderful Arizona. A registered sex offender got arrested after he jumped in bed with a preteen girl after he had broke into the home. 54-year-old registered sex offender was found in a bed with a sleeping 12-year-old girl. The girl woke up, finds this crazy dude in her bed, starts screaming. The mother and her 16-year-old brother, not the mother's 16-year-old brother, but the girl's 16-year-old brother, run in, have a confrontation, call police, et cetera, et cetera. just so all of you know, in the state of Arizona, that is a smoke 'em if you got 'em kind of situation. All right. A, you got Castle Doctrine, and B, you have, you know,
sexual assaults
and child molestation and stuff like that. So I'm not saying definitely shoot everybody that you might find in that circumstance, but I'm saying based on the context of the situation, you probably ought to consider ending that motherfucker, because what do you think he's going to do? He's going to get out of jail and fucking do it again.
Find a friend with hogs.
So just so you know, consider those kind of things. This is real shit.
Did they say how he got in?
Let me go a little deeper here in the article.
Because how does a 54-year-old man get into your house and get into the bedroom of your daughter?
I don't know. You're old man. How you fucking do it? You're pretty spry.
Yeah, but I got skills. This guy didn't have skills.
I got skills. This was up in Yavapai County. 54. He's a level 3 sex offender. I don't know exactly what that means.
They have levels?
Yeah. This is out by Paulden.
Wow.
It just said he broke into the home where 12-year-old and 16-year-old son reside.
Broke into the home. And made it all the way to the bedroom, laying in bed before anyone detected him, and took her screaming for that.
She woke up to him touching her face.
Wow.
He then ran out to the yard where the mother followed him. He exposed himself and threatened to drop her. Then he ran away. They chased him down, and then sheriff's department scooped him up.
With gloves on.
He just registered as a sex offender last week. And it says he lives nearby the victim. It doesn't say how he got in, though.
Well, just that he broke in. So that should be another lesson in home security. If someone can come in your house, get in your child's bedroom.
That easily?
And you only hear it when...
They start screaming?
Yeah, there's
no other level of detection?
Wow. Yeah.
Definitely.
Ask me again what kind of gun you should have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Let's not worry about the other concepts of self-defense. Let's just worry about what caliber it is. All right. Red Wire gear moment. Have a good holster for every single handgun you own. Every single handgun you own should have some type of good holster for it. Now, it doesn't have to be some high-end, you know, $100, $200 freaking badass rig. It could be... I don't care if it's a freaking $30, you know, Phobos holster or something for this aspect. And here's why. Because when you take the gun to the range, when you're going to go shoot it, you need a secure way to carry it around. Even if it's not going to be a holster, you're going to carry the gun in. Like, I have guns that I don't carry, but I do take them to the range. I still have holsters for them. So when I go to the range, I have a secure place to put the gun when it's not in my hand and when it's not being used. If I'm shooting it and I want to staple or tape or, you know, walk around over here, load my mag or go take a piss or whatever, I can secure this firearm. Have a good holster for every single firearm. Make that a goal. Instead of buying more guns, make sure you have the right stuff for the guns that you have. And take a couple $100, I'll bet, and you can get good holsters for, you know, guns that don't have holsters yet. It's also nice if you're going to take your friend shooting or someone's like, hey, man, you know, I want to take a class with you. You know, can I borrow that pistol? And you're like, oh, yeah, but shit, I don't have a holster for it. Like, fuck all that noise. Make it happen.
Do you have a holster for your revolver? Your new revolver?
I'm actually ordering one, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Dave and I just bought...
Matching revolvers.
Dave has no excuse. I was kind of drunk. Dave has literally no excuse for not buying this, for buying this gun. And then, did I already tell this story on the show?
I don't think so.
And then we proceeded to do insane feats of accuracy with this fucking gun. So
that's true, yeah.
I don't even know how we pulled that shit off, but we were at the – so we were doing this big training, and we had a little bit of downtime. It was like a 5-day training, and it was like, I don't know, like day 4 or something. We had some downtime in the morning because we were doing a night vision class that evening. And so there were 4 of us, me, Dave, Josh, and Nico, and we're like, well, let's go into, you know, Tombstone, the town, because it was close by where we were training. And like, oh, let's go get some, you know, get some lunch. We'll have some beers. It'll be great. And we go in there, and then Nico was looking for some stuffed animal or whatever for his wife. We're just looking around at these pistols. And we find these badass freaking revolvers. And I'm like, man, I've always wanted a single action revolver. And this one, you can change from black powder to center fire. It's really fucking cool. Yeah. And, you know, I was influenced by, you know, probably 60 ounces or so of beer. And so I'm like, okay, I'll get it. You know, and then Dave's like, oh, I want one too. So we buy these identical pistols. So then the next day we're out on the range and we're messing around with them. And we're teaching a rifle class. And so we're way out to long, long distance. And, And as always happens, Josh and I end up in this stupid fucking competition with these things. So he hits the 200-yard torso in
– with the 45 Colt.
It was a 45 long Colt. He hits the 200-yard torso in three rounds. And – or no, he hits it in two rounds. He hits it in two rounds because then I hit it in three rounds. And I was like, shit, man. You beat me. So I'm like, okay, fuck the 300 then. We're going to four. And, dude, my holdover is insane. I'm talking like horizon level, and there was a little white cloud above the horizon that I held on. And I, on my second round, no shit, everybody fucking saw it, right? This is not – it didn't happen in my mind. Everybody fucking saw it. And I freaking shot once, and I'm like, oof, made a quick adjustment for the wind. Now I'm calling – I'm doping wind on a 45 long hold at 400 fucking yards. And my second round, bong, I hit this freaking Ipsic torso. It was a pretty big target, right? It's an Ipsic torso. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then, I could not – I couldn't even fucking believe we did it. So then, then Josh was shooting it. I think he shot the whole fucking cylinder, and he didn't fucking hit it. So then, of course, Josh was like, well, then fuck your 400. I'm going to 500. And he didn't manage to get the 500. So then he pulled out his Glock with a red dot, and then we kept banging. Once we figured out where to hold, which is, again, like this fucking cloud above the horizon, once we figured out where to hold, we were just banging this fucking 500. I mean, it was insane. I don't know what we were – what we ate that morning for breakfast, but, yeah, we were
– yeah.
Well, we were doing pretty nice fucking burgers good.
In Tombstone. And you missed part of the story. So part of the story was when we go in this place, I'm looking at the revolver.
Yeah.
And I'm about to buy it.
Oh, yeah.
And Glenn walks over. He's like, I'm going to buy that. I'm like, what the heck?
A mostly drunk Glenn slides in. Hey!
So then I'm like, cool. All right, I guess it's not supposed to be. And then the woman, who's this older woman, and she's like, she's a salesperson.
Oh,
she's
dude,
like,
of all salespeople.
I might.
Ooh, I might have one, another one in the bag. I don't know. Let me go check. I'm like, Josh is like, she fucking has
it. And sure enough, she comes out with the
brand. I'm surprised Josh didn't buy one.
He was thinking about it. Well,
he wanted that
fucking revolver or a lever gun.
Yeah,
he was looking for like a hexagonal something lever gun. I can't remember what caliber he was after, but he never did find it. But yeah, and of course, then we bought like a couple boxes of 45 Long Colt, which is like $50 a box or something bullshit. But we had a good.
Now we have
a good
cool.
Time.
Cool revolvers.
Now we have cool revolvers. So actually, I haven't finalized which one I want.
Are I the owner of that gun?
So Drew stole it from me.
No,
which...
you sent me a picture and said I got you a new gun.
Well, that's my way of saying I bought a gun. Don't be mad.
Well, because we talked about that when we were buying it. It was like, so what's Drew going to think? And he's like, she's wanted a revolver.
I actually said she's actually wanted one of these cowboy guns because she loves fucking cowboy guns. So what I want to do is get I want to get a nice belt.
Yeah.
And then get a right-handed option and a left-handed option. So that way Drew can go out all cowgirl on it.
Sweet.
Yeah. Well, there's a story. Oh, man. Shoot. So, yeah, we did. Okay. So, yes, I am getting holsters at this point. All right. Topic for today's show. One gun versus task-specific guns. What a great segue. What's the best choice? Do I just have one gun? Or do I have task-specific guns? Now, what kind of spurred this on was a conversation that Dave and I were having about, hey, if you could set up three ARs, if you had three ARs, how would you set them up? You know, you have your close-range gun and, like, your mid-range gun and your long-range gun, or, like, how do you set these different guns up? You know, do I have just one lower and multiple uppers, you know, all that? There's an old saying that is, beware the man with one gun because he probably knows how to use it. And that's a phenomenal saying. And the concept goes into the idea of if you only have one gun, then you're probably highly efficient and proficient with it. You know it. You know how to clean it. You know how to repair it. You know, you've got extra parts for it. It's much easier to manage one gun. And I can remember back to the days, I mean, of, you know, a younger Glenn who only had, you know, a couple of guns in the safe. And I knew these guns very, very well. I mean, for a long time, I used one AR for everything. You know, it was my hunting gun, it was my teaching gun, it was everything. And it was just useful. Over the years, as I've expanded into competition shooting and different styles of competition shooting and different styles of hunting with ARs and different types of teaching and all that kind of stuff, and equipment has changed, and, you know, we've got some demo guns from different companies and all that, then of course that collection has expanded to include a variety of different setups. So do you just want the one gun, or do you want task-specific guns? What are the pros and cons? Well, one of the pros of having the one gun concept is, as I already mentioned, you just have one gun to worry about, just one gun to maintain, one gun to track parts on, one gun to track barrel life on, one gun to track maintenance on, one gun to manage. That's it. Just
train
one.
With.
One gun to train with. Get incredibly familiar with this piece of equipment. And a lot of people out there have that. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Now, if you're going to set that gun up, that one gun, and we're going to say in this case that it's a long gun. Now, I don't care if that means shotgun, rifle, or carbine. I don't care if that's a lever action or an AR-15 or a pump action 12 gauge. It doesn't matter. Whatever you decide your one gun ought to be, you now have to look at the real world context of how you're going to be using it. Is this a home defense gun? Is this a field gun? Is this going to be your, you know, real world? What do you think the odds are of you grabbing this thing and heading to the streets, you know, in Boogaloo, Civil War style, whatever? You know, is that something you're even concerned about? Are you also trying to compete with it? This is where the one gun concept starts to have a problem. In my opinion, this is where it butts its head against the wall, which it is difficult to get one gun that will do well in all those environments. You know, in a competition world where I might have to be stretching out to 500, 600, 700, 800 yards with, let's say, a 5.56 AR, which is totally possible of doing, but I'm going to need a longer barrel. I'm going to need a more magnified optic. In a home defense situation, I don't want that longer barrel. I don't want that magnified optic. So I'm saying, well, people are like, no problem, just get an offset red dot. Okay, so now I'm adding more to this gun, and it's still really long, all right? And then people go, well, just get a couple uppers, have one set up short and one set up for long. Well, that's also a really good option, and it also precludes me from having to own multiple serialized lowers, and that's a fine option for sure. And then I can really get to know the trigger and the lower and get my ambi safety and the stock I want and the grip I want and everything, and that definitely works. But where I really start to continue to butt my head up against that is, this is now, if I'm doing that, then it's not truly the one gun concept. And I have to have – I'm going to have different options. Now, okay, let's look at from the military aspect of the one gun, where you really only did typically have one gun. So special operations guys would have, you know, several setups. But for your average dude, you know, you probably only have one gun. And if you have one gun, then you could have multiple optics. Like, you know, you might be able to, you know, it's where QD mounts or quick detach mounts came from, is the ability to take off my red dot and put on, you know, an L-can, you know, a 1-6, or throw on, you know, put my EOTech on there and pull my magnifier on and off as needed. So, you know, now I'm having the capability to add things, and how does that shift my zero, taking one optic on and or taking one optic off and put another one on, you know, half minute if it's a good mount. I should only see about a half minute shift, if any shift. And but now I have to account for that. It's not going to be the same every time, et cetera, et cetera. So there are disadvantages to just following that one gun concept. One of the biggest advantages still remains, it's going to be less money, but overall, it's going to really teach you about that one gun. Now, the benefit of having multiple setups, of course, and this could be, again, shotgun, rifle, carbine, handgun even, of course. What are you looking at? What's the idea of having the task-specific guns or multiple setups? Well, now they're task-specific. Now I have a handgun that I carry, a handgun that I compete with, and maybe a handgun that I hunt with. And they're going to be set up to maximize the capabilities. Instead of trying to make something work for these different setups, or for these different situations, I mean, I have a setup for each situation. And probably one of the biggest advantages of having task-specific guns is if they are in any way, shape, or form similar, then I might be able to share mags, share ammo, share extra spare parts. Like if I have multiple AR setups, for example, then I can share spare parts across the board. I can share mags across the board. They're using the same ammo for the most part. So it's having that capability is beneficial. It's also beneficial because now if I find myself in a situation, I might need to cannibalize one gun. You know, if it's that Boogaloo type situation, I got to cannibalize one to make the other work. Or I have someone, you know, Dave's over at the house having dinner when the, you know, something shit kicks off or whatever you could say. And now it's like, no problem, dude. I have an extra rifle for you, instead of like, sorry, bro, I just have the one for me. You know, get your fists out. You know, like that's not necessarily what we might want to do. Having a task-specific gun also enables me to make sure that I'm really getting the most out of that equipment. As an example, Like, I would say I have three – I'm just going to use ARs as an example because that was what started this conversation with Dave and I. I have three very specific setups that I use the most, and kind of a fourth one that I use a lot as well. But the first one is my go-to gun. This thing is set up for all my possibilities. It's a 10.5 inch. It's suppressed. It's got my night vision laser and light on it. It's got, you know, a dedicated white light on it. It's got, you know, my primary red dot as well as a magnifier. It's got the stock, everything I like. It's got like five different sling attachment points. It is set up to every – so I could mold this thing to anything that I want. It's a heavy-ass gun. It's heavy for me to go out and teach with, and I don't spend a lot of time shooting when I'm teaching, demoing even a handful of minutes. It's just not that much. And so I also have a compact, nice little tight training gun that I use. So when I'm out teaching and demoing and whatever, I need a white light and a basic red dot, and that's pretty much it for the most part. I've got a nice short little, you know, SBR again, something that's tight and easy to work with. And then I've got my longer range setup, you know, and that setup is longer barrel, magnified optic, suppressor capable, you know, bipods usually is kind of permanently affixed to it. And now I have the capability to stretch out to distance, you know. And then my other setup is really more of just a competition setup, that's just a run and gun, fast, lightweight, easy to use gun. I'm not shooting as much competitions as I used to. That's action match. Most of the stuff I'm shooting now is distance, and there's a lot of positional and whatever, but I don't have to be quite as fast up close with it, so not as big of a deal. I'm not using that gun as much these days, but it's still an option. So the advantage of all that, of course, is I have all these guns that are very task-specific. The downside to them is I'll have to track them all individually. I got to track round counts. I got to track, you know, life on components. I've got to make sure they're all maintained. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot just to pull those guns out and maintain just those four, not to mention the other ones that we have.
And storing all of that stuff, yeah, too.
And then I got to store it all. And then you've got to insure it all. And then there's a lot to having more than one firearm that we're not always thinking about, right? I got to record that with my insurance. Like, there's a lot that's happening. To make sure that, you know, I've got that. And, you know, if I've got multiple setups, I have multiple suppressors, multiple SBRs, whatever, then that's multiple tax stamps. That's multiple, you know, recorded guns with the federal government. So there's a lot that's going to be going on there. And I think the biggest thing that people overlook when they're buying more guns is they're overlooking the other guns. You know, now those other guns aren't going to get as much maintenance. Those other guns aren't going to get as much use. Those other guns, it's, you know, it's like having a new puppy, right? It's the same concept. Like, you're going to give all your attention to that new puppy, and you kind of forgot about the old dog, you know, and they don't get maybe the stuff that they need to be taken care of properly because all your attention is here on the new puppy. So I think that to kind of answer Dave's question, I'll let him chime in here, but to answer Dave's question, you know, would I rather have the one gun or the multi-beat, you know, the task specific? I love the task specific mostly because I have multiple options there and I can cannibalize and use parts from one to feed the other if needed.
Yeah, and that's how I set it. You know, I've got the home defense gun set up, short barrel, suppressed, you know, all that. And it's the one also that I feel most comfortable with because it's the one I've trained with the most, because that's the – of all the priorities of my ARs, that's the one most important is my home defense one. So that's the one that up until recently, the one I spent the most money on, the one I've shot the most, the one I feel it just fit. I just like how it fits, everything about it. So but then the reason where this came up for me was I also have a hunting AR, my coyote gun. And so that's longer barrel, you know, magnified optic, all that kind of stuff as well. And so I have that set up. And then I also have now I'm moving into putting an IR on my Daniel Defense rifle with the, you know, the high mount and getting into that world. So now it's almost like, okay, so now I've got these three setups. And it's like, well, could I see myself doing some night hunting with my – yeah, so I guess I need to get an IR for that. Could I see myself – wanting an IR on my short barrel self-defense gun? Maybe, maybe not. But now I'm looking at, yeah, buying three sets of equipment versus just one, right, on three different rifles, possibly, you know, irrationally justifying why I want to buy all this stuff. But at the same time, like, you know, yeah, being set up for the next thing. And then ultimately where this conversation was going for me was – when I picked up 308 and I was like, okay, and I was talking to you about it and you said, that's my get out of Dodge gun.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Cause I want something that's works like an AR with gasser with, you know, lots of ammo, but also the ballistic energy that it provides is obviously different than the 5.56. So having that gun as mm-hmm. your, if I had to take one gun out of my safe, that being the gun, you know, made me look at, okay, well, then how do I want to set this up? If that's going to be what I want to do, how do I set that 308 up to be that kind of a gun as well?
And that's where I think task-specific guns really come into play. I think it's really hard, you know, these days to have that one gun when you have so many options. I mean, that one gun option was great back in the Wild Wild West when, you know, extra parts were not necessarily the easiest to come by and a gun dealer may only have this or a gun dealer may only, you know, sell this type of ammo or guys are hand crimping their own ammo, you know, and doing all that kind of stuff. And there just wasn't as much available. And you're talking about guns that for the most part were very similar in their performance. And, you know, you're just like, you either want a, you know, a fast handling lever gun or you needed a, you know, longer range bolt gun or whatever, you know. You weren't necessarily looking at such a variety that we have today and such a variety of options. So, yeah, I mean, you expand out to that and say, okay, I also have different competition guns for different types of competitions, you know. I've got one competition gun that's an AR. I've got one competition gun that's a bolt. I have another bolt gun that's made for a different type of competition, you know, my lightweight adventure race type, you know, stuff. Right. That's a different bolt gun. So I'm a huge fan of task-specific guns just simply because it gives you the opportunity to add variety. It also adds more horses to the stable. And for me, that's really important because ultimately what I'm trying to do is also, just in case, be able to provide, you know, firearms to my people, whether that's my family, you know, whether it's someone extra, you know, another person or whatever, to where we're able to, excuse me, we're able to go, yeah, okay, I can hand this rifle to my kid, you know, and say, yeah, you can, you know, you can use this gun for our next hunt. It's also a gun that I might use on a competition, you know, or if there's a situation, we can open up the safe and have more than just my one rifle, one shotgun, you know, one pistol kind of concept. There's more in there than that. Things break. You never know, you know, when it's hard to find parts. You look at all the crazy gun control, gun banning shit that's coming down the pike at us, and you don't know. You know, you don't know what potentially is going to happen next and what parts are going to be hard to find, what magazines are going to be hard to find, what, you know, so it's like if I have multiple guns, like for me, I like to try to have a gun in every major NATO caliber. Any caliber that's in common usage, I want to have a gun in. I want to have a gun in 300 Blackout even though I don't shoot 300 Blackout because 300 Blackout's caliber I might have access to. Right. You know, there was a time with pistols where you couldn't find hardly any ammo but 40 cal. This was years and years ago during one of the other crazy gun panics that I ran out and bought a police trade-in Glock 40 cal even though I don't like 40 cal, but I made sure I had a gun in 40 cal. I have a gun in 45. You know, obviously I have guns in 9mm. I've got guns in 7.62x51. I've got guns in 5.56. You know, I have guns in every NATO caliber that I can get. You know, you start to get into calibers that are harder to get or that are not as feasible to have, and that's okay. But like the major, like we'll say small arms type stuff, not heavy weapons, not belt feds, not anything like that, but just like typical individual small arms, I think you should have a gun in every caliber. You know, that way you have at least – that, and again, these are task-specific guns. I'm not using the shotgun for what I'm using a rifle for what I'm using a carbine for what I'm using a pistol for. Right. So if you just looked at it from that, you would have at least four guns right there, which right. would be a 9mm, a 5.56, a 308, and a 12-gauge, you know, or 7.62. Like if I had those four caliber, just that right there, I already have task-specific guns because I've got right. a long-range rifle, I've got a carbine, I've got my pistol and I've got a shotgun. And just that right there, already I've got four different firearms.
Right. And probably $5,000 to $10,000 investment. Easy.
Yeah, easily. Yeah.
So, and that's it. Because when you start talking about task specific outside of the carbine, mm-hmm. now you look at, well, shotguns. Well, I have three shotguns. I have my pump action, which is my reliable, right? But it's not going to be good for competition. So I have a semi-automatic. I've got a Beretta that I would use if I, you know, did more competition in that regard. But I use it for when I go out to Ben Avery and do trap shooting. Mm. That's the gun because my Benelli is set up as a defensive weapon. So it's got, you know, I could use it with traps, but it's not really designed. It's heavy. I've got it set up to be more of a tactical style. And so it doesn't have a bead sight. It's, you know, got optics and so forth. So it's just designed to be something more aggressive. But so now I've got those three. And then I go to my handgun. I'm like, okay, well, I got my carry gun, right? And then I've got but like for you, like you carry different size guns for convenience in the same caliber.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is it, okay, I want different caliber handguns, but I also may want multiple guns of the same caliber based on my environment. Where am I going? What do I want to carry? You know, if I'm going out hiking, do I want to carry a big gun? Do I want to carry the extra mag? Or if I'm in the city, you know, all those factors now come into play where now you have other task specific guns based on context where my environment is different. So being able to, you know, you get into that rabbit hole of gun purchases are like, well, I need this gun. You know, now I have a revolver that I got to find a use for.
You don't have to find a use for it. That's a fun gun, remember?
Right, yeah.
That's a fun gun.
That's the other thing, too. A while back, a number of years ago, I transitioned to that idea that, so first off, every gun I bought had a purpose. If it wasn't functional for what I could actually use it for, then I didn't buy it.
Mm.
Then I got into precision shooting and trying to articulate why I needed to shoot someone at 1,000 yards was really difficult. But I still got into that world because, like you said, yeah, that's a fun gun. It's not – I mean, I enjoy that, and I want to have that skill. I want to have that skill set. I would much more be able to justify why I need a handgun or a carbine than I would, you know, my 6.5 Creedmoor that I can take out. Mm. But I, when I go to hunting now, well, now all of a sudden there is a realistic use for that kind of technology and that kind of training, that skill, because now I can take that 6.5 out and I can actually kill a beast and, you know, feed my family for a while. So then you get into other, like, you know, the revolver. That's totally just a fun gun, right? Just, it's, you know. And so I have a few of those now where I feel like I've got some guns that have tasks and other guns that I'm kind of a collector. You know, like, mm-hmm. I just want that gun. That's just a fun gun for me to have. And so that adds to the gun collection, which adds to the size of the safe, which mm-hmm. adds to the amount of ammo I need, because I need ammo for all these guns now, right? Now I need 45 Colt, and now I need 6.5 Creedmoor, and mm-hmm. I need, you know, stuff that I can go shoot to play around with. Then I also need stuff I need to hunt with. And so then you have how many different versions of ammo do I have in my safe? You know, and so it really turns into a much bigger conglomeration of tasks and then all of the supporting cast behind each task.
And when you look at, you have, like you mentioned, collector stuff, like we were, you know, talking about those single action pistols. Yeah, obviously those are collector guns. I'm not going to carry that gun. I'm not really going to use it for anything other than just shooting for fun. It's just literally used for shooting for fun and just enjoying the process and the excitement of shooting. When I look at more task-oriented guns, I also want cross-platform solutions. Like, as I mentioned, you know, having lots of ARs means that I can use the same mags. I can use the same ammo. I can use the same stuff. They all have Picatinny rails on them, et cetera. It's really easy to customize those things. You mentioned, you know, pistols. Yeah, I use, you know, typically I'll carry a Glock 26. It uses normal double stack Glock magazines. Now, it has 26 size magazines, which is what goes in the gun when I'm carrying it, but then my backup mag is a Glock 17 mag. And now if I switch to my Glock 19, which has the same sights, same exact trigger, same exact stippling, everything is exactly the same on the gun. It has light on it, everything. Everything is exactly the same. It's just a slightly larger frame. Now, it's got the larger Glock 19 mag in it when I'm carrying, but I still can carry the same backup Glock 17 mag. And then if I go to my night gun, you know, which has a Glock 17 with a red dot and a bigger light on it, it that is capable of infrared, so I can use it with my night vision, it's got a Glock 17 mag in it. And I'm still carrying the same fucking Glock 17 backup mag. Yeah. And then the magazine that I keep in my truck, which is my, you know, oh my God, holy shit, backup magazine, it's a Glock 33 round stick. Like, it goes in the 26, the 19, or the 17. So it's one of the reasons that I selected that series of firearms to be able to carry. Yeah, the 26 is still bigger than, you know, a 48 or whatever. But ultimately, it's because I had those other options. So if I am going to have task-specific guns, I do put some more thought into them about how they're going to work across the rest of the platforms.
Right.
You know, if I have lots of setups, like if I'm going to have task-oriented guns, am I going to put all the lights in different places? That's going to suck. am I going to zero all the optics at different distances? That's going to suck. You know, do all the different guns have different ammo that they like? Yeah, that's going to suck. Like, these are all extra things that it takes me when I have lots of different platforms to utilize. And so that's something to consider. Like, okay, I'm going to, you know, if I have a red dot, like me, I keep things simple. And I keep them simple because it's easier because of how much I have to deal with firearms. Like, if I have a red dot, it's 0 to 50 yards. If I have a magnified optic, it's 0 to 100 yards.
Keep it simple.
Unless I have something that is very, 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 very specific, like an ACOG needs to be 0 to 36 meters or whatever.
Or hunting. Well, no, hunting, you still do 100.
Yep, so. Still do 100. If it's magnified, it goes to 100. If it's not magnified, it's a 50.
Right.
Like, it's really easy across the board. Ammunition's going to vary. Trajectory's going to vary. Now I got to keep that ballistic arc program on my freaking phone just to keep track of all the various different trajectories that I have based on the platform that I'm shooting. So with those task-oriented guns become so many other considerations. You know, what's nice about some of my guns, like I have one competition gun that I've shot for years and years and years, one of my old Kate Yarms KE-15s. I used it for a long, long time doing action matches. I know that still to this day I can memorize, you know, I could sit here and write out that freaking gun's trajectory. You know, I know where that thing hits out to 800 yards like it's my, you know, job to do so. It's just – that gun is just – I know it so well. I used it so much. I've got tens and tens of thousands of rounds to that rifle. I know perfectly how that thing runs. I know the way it feels. I know what it's capable of doing. I know that gun so freaking well. And so I do, you know, still have guns like that that are just so well known to me. My primary carbine that's set up, you know, for my night gun and kind of my primary go-to gun. Like, I know that thing like the back of my hand. I've taken it apart and put it back together. I built it. You know what I mean? Like, I know this gun. I'm very familiar with it. And so I think you have to, even if you have a lot of task-oriented guns, you need to pick like one or two. Imagine the one gun concept. If you were going to open your safe and grab one gun, I don't care what it is. It could be an AR-10 or an AR-15 or freaking lever action 357. I don't give a shit what it is. But if you were going to open your safe and grab one gun, think to yourself, which one would that be? And this is the last time I'm going to have a chance to select. I got to walk away from this forever. I get this one. Let's just say that was a thing. Which one would you take? Now train and prepare and maintain and take that thing apart and put it back together and just know that thing like the back of your hand. So even though you may have a lot of task-oriented guns, even though you may have a variety of choices, I would still really encourage people to just get to know one, maybe two, like get to know them incredibly, incredibly well. Like this is my go-to.
Right. And that's where you could tie in the risk reality matrix too. To say, of all the guns I have, you know, what's the reality of me using any of these in this, the form that I'm going to use them? And then use that as a training tool, right? Like, that's, again, I hate, it's rare for me to ever train with a battle belt.
Mm-hmm.
Because I almost never wear a battle belt for any reason unless I'm training.
Right.
So I train, even when I come out to classes and there's a student, I still train appendix. Because of all the guns I have, the gun on me is the one I'm most likely to use and the one I want to be the best at, right? Because that's the one that's going to be most life-saving.
Oh, yeah.
And then the second one is my home defense carbine. So those are the two guns that have the most rounds through them and my most experienced ones I'm most comfortable with. And so having those additionally, like, you know, but like you said, being able to train and know all your guns and having software like the Ballistic Arc is awesome because you can – pull up data that otherwise would take you to a book and flipping through pages and have to, you know, there's just so much more handwork involved. Whereas, wow, and I can use technology to help me manage the details of each of these weapons.
And the Marine Corps, to kind of finish up what we're going to do with the show this week, but the Marine Corps had this, I heard this from my Marine friends, you know, years and years ago of, you know, the one mind, any weapon concept. And I truly believe that when people say, oh, I'm not good with this handgun or I'm not good, you know, with this rifle or I'm not so good with this, I believe what they're honestly saying is I'm not really that good. I will say, of course, you're going to be more effective and more efficient with a weapon that you know very well. And naturally, I'm probably going to hit things better with my, you know, customized 6.5 Creedmoor that I'm probably going to hit if I were to pick up an old 303 British, you know what I mean, with iron sights trying to smoke something at 1,000 yards. Like, that's going to take me a little bit to figure that out and pick up my 6.5 and do it in the first or second round, no problem, you know?
Yeah.
Point being is get to know all your guns, like you said. Be so well-rounded that you don't have to have only one gun, that any gun could be your one gun if it had to be.
Right. Yeah.
All righty. Oh, I lost my notes. Where they at? There we go. Independence training moment. What did Drew and Glenn do this past week to better prepare any of our four zones for emergency? We went to family and continued training our kids in combatives. You know, a couple of the twins, or not a couple of the twins, the only twins. The only twins. A couple of the kids who are twins. That's a better way to say that. Attended the alumni event with, you know, Dave, and it was fun to watch them. Obviously, they were the youngest kids there and the youngest people there, and it was fun to watch them battle it out and kick the shit out of each other and do all that kind of stuff. But really take training your kids in combatives seriously. I mean, look, we were just reading that story at the beginning of the show about that young gal who woke up and some creepy ass dudes in her bed touching her face. Like, she should know some shit to never let that happen. Teach your kids combatives. Teach your kids how to fight. If you're, and I will make this challenge to all fathers, fight with your boys. If you have sons, fight with them. If you have daughters, definitely fight with them too. But fight with your boys. It's gladiator shit. It's man shit. Right? Show them. Fight with them. Toss them around. Show them how to fight. Show them how to hit. Show them how to grab somebody. Wrestle with them, right, Drew? Wrestle with them. All
right? Okay.
Get them out of their comfort zone of, oh, don't touch me. Oh, don't, you know, oh, that hurts. Now I don't want to play anymore. Like, no. Make them tough. Make them tough. Independence Training Moment brought to you by independencetraining.com or trainingaz.com. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information via email, info@trainingaz.com. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, Red Wire Gear, MRC Phoenix, and PMA Scottsdale or Premier Martial Arts Scottsdale. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. If you have never checked them out and you are listening to our show, please check them out. They do so many wonderful things in the media world. And Adam, the owner of Heroes Media Group, is such a good person. Next week, we're going to be talking about the do's and don'ts of home security, how to lock it down without just worrying about what gun is best. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.